CliffCentral.com.
All right. CliffCentral.com on Friday morning. Lots of messages coming through. Let us know what you're up to today and what your plans are for the weekend. We want to hear from you, all of that stuff. By the way, I got this very important update, Simpiwe, from Dari, who's just told me that the poop doctor is also empowered to answer questions about farts.
No. Not just... 2-in-1 special. Yes!
Just in case you thought we were leaving some stones unturned, this is an important discussion, so we're going to have that as well. Dud says, I only listen to hear the lavatorial conversations, as important as any other health topic. Viva pooing viva. Make pooing great again.
Okay. All right.
Great.
I like that.
All right, so we'll ask some of these questions, but keep sending them in because obviously we don't want to leave anybody out in the cold, and this is a hugely important subject for everybody. So if anybody wants to throw in a comment, you let us know. Okay. Also coming up a bit later, George Meany will be joining us, so stick around for all of that. I mentioned just a little while ago, like some of the things that I'm getting ready for, you know, the holidays and everything else. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to make sure I've stocked up on everything. So I'm all sorted from that point of view. But I actually canceled something the other day. I do an annual kind of Christmas party at my house.
Okay.
Where there a bunch of friends. It's now been 6 years in a row that we've done this. And I decided this year I'm calling it off.
Oh, no.
No, because I've taken over like a family thing that I'm going to have to do, which is much more work and much more, you know, a much bigger crowd. So I've decided, no, I don't need to put this extra pressure on myself. Plus, I would have to cater for food and there's expenses. Yeah.
And we know you like your tomatoes.
Well, no, I mean, this so last year there was like lamb on the spit, which was
okay.
But this year I decided I'm going to take a break. I'm going to remove that responsibility. Gives me an extra weekend where I don't have to worry about
it. So none of your friends are like, okay, since you're not doing it, it's fine. I'll just...
No, I think that they're all... Either they're relieved that we're taking a break from it because there's the Secret Santa thing that we do. You have to like buy the cheapest, ugliest, nastiest, shittiest present you can find for under $100.
Mm-hmm.
There's no breaking the rule. It has to be under $100. People would compete to bring the most stupid gift of all. So some people are very upset that they can't use their gifts now.
Mm-hmm.
But I said to them, we'll do it next year. Keep it in the cupboard somewhere and bring it next year, your shitty gift. And also, then I don't have to worry about food and drink and catering for people. So it's one less thing to worry about. It'll make my December more pleasant. Not that I don't want to see my friends. I mean, I'll see them anyway.
Yeah,
but I don't have to take on all the responsibility of organizing this big thing.
Okay.
So, make life easier.
So, I'm like the opposite, where my friends and I, we are going to be starting with Friendmas.
Oh, nice.
Yes, that's what we're starting with this year. We're going to start on the 26th because, our parents still want us at home on the 25th.
Everyone.
And, we're just kind of trying to organize who's bringing what. Because we're doing it on a very, I have a house, and then who's going to bring the meat? Who's bringing salads?
Exactly.
So that's what we're still trying to organize. And we did something similar last year, which was great, but it was a braai. And it was beautiful. But now we're trying to do a whole lunch.
That's great. That's lovely. That's a nice thing to do.
But no Christmas gifts, no...
New. Especially if you're doing it on the 26th, then you don't have to worry. By then, everyone's done the Christmas gift thing.
Yes.
I always find people are really in a mood to let loose after Christmas because now they've done the family time, they've... I've done all the Christmassy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're religious, then they've been to church. They've done all of those things. 26th rolls round, Boxing Day. People are like, woo!
Just want to chat. Yes, especially if you were cooking, guys. Because you start cooking the 23rd, 24th for Christmas Day.
It's a big one.
Oh, and you're just I'm tired. Whatever is left over. Aye, guys, see yourself. The tech is still there.
And there's always leftovers.
No, there has to.
Always. So the other thing that happens over this time of year is that people have holiday relationships or they break up so they can have a holiday.
No, Karen, it's
a real thing.
Yes, everyone knows that relationships officially come to an end on the 15th of December.
Mm-hmm.
So that May 16th, December, people are single. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? And then you can rekindle that love lives here again on the 23rd of Jan.
Love lives here again. Oh, my God. All right. So what are the rules? Are there rules around this? Are people meant to get hurt if they, you know, they're the December romance, or they've been broken up with for December, or they're meant to just take it and deal with it?
I think it depends. If you are in a committed relationship, the T's and C's are on you guys. Like, if you guys want to take a break, take a break. But if you're single and you're just flirting and there was someone you were talking to, maybe it might get serious. Nope, it comes to a halt. A complete halt on the 15th of December. That's when December is still December. The minute we get into December, no. You're a single babe. Hmm. You're living your best life. You don't know that man. That man doesn't know you. You're not doing FaceTime calls and checking up on them. No.
I think for some people, there's a lot of pressure, especially if you are in a relationship where, let's say you're not, let's say you're over that initial like excitement and romance and turn on and all of that stuff. Let's say you've just gone past that stage and now you've been around each other for a while, but now you're actually going to spend a prolonged holiday time, and there might even be her family or your family or someone else involved. It gets very messy, and there's a lot of pressure on people this time of year.
There is. So, like, I know in the black community, the family meetings and whatnot, you can somewhat get away with not attending. Because in the black household, you don't have a boyfriend, you don't have a girlfriend. It's either your wife or your husband that you're introducing us to.
Right.
Right. So there's that thing that you could be living with your partner, and they know that you're with your partner, but it's that thing, like, if my mom's coming over, he kind of then has to just scoot and disappears. So that's always interesting. Those dynamics are always interesting. But what I've also noticed is that the younger generations, this period that you're talking about, they tend to ask for a visa, Gareth.
Which is?
So a visa is basically you asking your partner to legally cheat.
Oof.
And they don't need to know when you're going to do it, who you're going to do it with. It's just like that card, that green card that you give them to say, hey, you got a visa. If you're out and about with the boys or the girls, if something happens.
How do people really manage that? I've always looked at this and thought, no, this isn't possible. Because I know one couple who tried that open relationship stuff. It doesn't work. Someone gets hurt. Someone falls in love. Someone falls out of love. Whenever there's an imbalance of feelings, it just leads to pain. And I don't understand why you want to be in a relationship when you're giving that person a green. The relationship's done.
Yes.
You're finished. There's no way you can get back after that and go, all right, well, we've both had our fun now. Now let's settle down. No damage has been done at all. Bullshit.
I don't believe it for a second. I don't know how people do it, but there are people out there doing it. They're teaching us the ways, and I'm just like, this is nonsense. Because I'm also like, why are you giving a visa? Why are you saying it's okay for you to step out if you guys have agreed to be monogamous? And that's the issue, is that people enter relationships, and then they say, this is what I can do, but you can't do that. You know that in your bone and hearts of hearts, you're not a monogamous person.
No.
But you sell monogamy. But then
you shouldn't be in a relationship. Like, if you're not a monogamous person, don't even do that. Because most people are.
Yes.
Most people are. They don't want to share.
That's true. But there's a reality show called Ukuthanda Nesithembe, which is basically about a man who's polygamous, right? And I've been watching it, and I'm like, I don't know how these ladies do it. So he has four wives. He wants to take wife number five. And now they're all up in arms. They're like, no, it's taken us years to just be living in harmony with each other as the various wives or sister wives. And you just see the toll that it takes on these ladies. Like, the second wife is technically the first love of his life that he met, but she didn't want to do this, and then she compromised. And then, like, the third wife now, like, they're the best friend, but can't.
I don't understand.
There's so much drama in it, and you realize, no, this is...
It's the ability for these people to have normal, meaningful relationships just can't be good. It just doesn't sound sensible to me. There's no way. Especially if you've got kids as well. Like, that's got to confuse the head out of the children. They're going to grow up feeling very insecure.
Yeah. But it's... And they say they do it and they're happy, and I'm just like, but are you really...
No.
Or are you just settling for something that you think is the next best thing?
It's not possible. I'm sorry. I just don't believe it. And I'm very open-minded about these things because, you know, people's relationships are different. Everybody has a different set of, you know, preferences and ideas, and you're entitled to yours. But you're like the ability for these people to switch on and off, I don't think that's human. If you're a robot, sure. You can switch on the love, switch off the love. Now we're in a relationship, click. Now we're not, click. Uh-uh. Doesn't work. Lindy says, can I separate from my husband on the 15th until the 3rd? No one told me. Well, I don't know. You guys try and figure that out. All right. So many questions rolling in about poop. I'm thrilled to have Mashiko back, and it's such a pleasure to see you. She is a professor, Professor Mashiko Seshedi, and it's great to have you here, the poop doctor. How are you, Prof?
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Fantastic. It's so good to see you. So a lot of people are very, very interested in you and what you might be able to provide for us in terms of information around our gut, in terms of our, you know, our what would you call it? Our excretory habits, how important this stuff is. Simpiwe and I were talking about it just now. We were like, why is it that this is not discussed like everything else we talk about that we do every day? Eating and sleeping and, you know, what exercise we do. These are all aspects of our health that people talk about on a daily basis. And everyone who's ever sat down with a friend has talked about all those things. You never sit down with a friend, though, and compare, like, notes about your shitting, for example. Why is that?
I mean, I think as you correctly point out, this is a physiological action that we all do, mm-hmm. you know, no matter who you are.
Yeah.
But I suppose we've been socialized that it is impolite, you know, to talk about, you know, your poop, to compare notes. And while I think, you know, it's probably not okay to sort of ask the stranger sitting next to you on the flight, well, is your poop S-shaped or not? I certainly think that we should talk a lot more about it, because I think it is really a clue to what's going on with not just your gut health, just your health in general. Yeah. And I think, you know, platforms such as this and conversations such as this are really, really important. It's not something to be ashamed about. I always say it doesn't really pay to be prudish about poop. It's bizarre. It is what we do. We should be able to talk about it, obviously, in the correct settings.
Well, Prof, we're going to take it seriously this morning because there are a lot of questions that people have sent in. In fact, I think I got more questions from people here than when I've interviewed presidents and kings, and people have had questions for them. So you are our most popular guest just by the number of questions we had sent in from people. Okay, so let's start with the first question from the audience. I eat a healthy diet, avoid processed foods, exercise almost every day, and live a pretty healthy life. But I never make good of old-fashioned logs and always seem to have a lot of mopping up to do. Can I still be healthy if my waist is more paste than perfection? How's that, friend? That is a beautifully crafted question.
I think so, too. Well, congratulations to whoever asked it in terms of them trying to attend to their gut health, doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And it does sound from the question like they're absolutely doing the right thing.
Okay.
It may be that there isn't enough fiber. And so the poop is coming out more as a paste or loose stool, more than a formed sort of stool. So fiber gives you a little bit of volume. And it dries up the stool a little bit, but you don't want to dry it too much so that you're now constipated. So it may be that there isn't enough fiber, so I may suggest that he actually ups his fiber. So there's lots of fiber in fruits and vegetables and so forth, but I don't know if he or she is consuming nuts and whole grains and maybe even a fiber supplement. So that might help to just sort of
By the way, find it. What are the long-term consequences of having slightly looser stools? Are there long-term dangerous consequences to the gut, to the anus? Like, what? How can it be better managed, and what happens if you don't manage it?
So, look, it's not a problem per se. And for this listener, it may be that that is simply the consistency of their stool, and that's normal for them. Mm. It starts to become a problem if he's wiping so much that it causes irritation to the anus. Because then once there's irritation, mucosal breaks, then, of course, the risk of infection goes up. You know, the risk of other things happen. So it's not a problem per se, except that if it's not comfortable for him or her, or if they have to wipe a lot, then, you know, there are ways to try and address that. It is possible, but I wouldn't think that's the case in this particular listener, that when your stool is a bit pasty or mucoidy, it is possible that there might be underlying fecal incontinence. Now, that's a separate story. There may be other symptoms that will go with it to tell you that there's a problem with emptying the rectum completely. You know, and if you're not emptying the rectum completely, then there will always be residue. And so you will end up wiping, which, as I say, is a problem because it can cause irritation. So you do want to try and avoid it for that reason. But I would suggest, first and foremost, increase the fiber intake, and then just be mindful to maybe other symptoms that may suggest that there's an anorectal problem right at the bottom. Hence, you're not sort of excreting everything completely.
All right. So, Prof, what about what you already mentioned an S shape? Is this Dr. Oz who's got everyone talking about this S shape healthy stool? Is that true that you need an S shape if you're really healthy?
Look, he is right. So we have what we call the Bristol stool chart, and that is a visual representation of how the stool should look, and it ranges from constipation to diarrhea. And the S-shaped stool is somewhere between what we call a type 2 and a type 3 stool. Now, that is a soft stool that has a smooth surface with very few cracks in it. And so because of the way it comes out of the rectum, it's typically S-shaped, and it's typically complete. So when you're done, there's this sense of absolute satisfaction, you know, because the entire thing is out. And when you wipe, it will be clean, generally, because you've meant to excrete everything in one sort of motion. And not only about how it looks, but also the sound it makes as it drops into the water. True story. So there's a gentle sort of, yeah, there you are. You know, so if it's hard, obviously, and splashing about and causing you to get wet, surely that's not right, right? You want it to be a gentle drop into the pan, soft with a particular sound. So, yes, I mean, I think, you know, we can make fun about it, but the reality of the matter is that there is a stool that we consider to be normal, not too hard, certainly not too soft. But I think in this context, it's important also to say people are not exactly the same.
No.
So the main thing is that your stool in your adult life will have a particular character, and you just need to know what that is, because the importance of that is that you want to know when that changes. Mm-hmm. And so your stool and my stool will not be necessarily be the same. It depends on your gut health. It depends on what you eat. It depends on whether you exercise. It depends on your hormones. It depends on all sorts of things. So I think we shouldn't strive necessarily for the perfect poop as per that description. That
because
description.
People are like that. Yeah. They want to be the best at everything. So someone is listening to this now going, I want to be the best at this. So how do I become the athlete, the great overachiever of pooing? All right. So Simpiwe's got a question for you about the position you should be in when you defecate. And this is very important. I've heard all kinds of things about this. So Simpiwe, our ancestors obviously didn't have toilets. But Simpiwe, where did you hear about this?
So I saw a TikTok video where I get all my information. And in this TikTok video, it was like these, it's called the squad sitting heels. And basically you put those on before you go to the toilet to do the number two. And that's supposed to help you, you know, be able to get the bowel movements moving correctly. Is that correct? Are there positions that we're supposed to kind of do?
So I haven't personally heard about these heels, but if you think about it from an evolutionary perspective, there were no toilets. So if you are going to do your business, you go out into the field and you would squat and do your business. It makes sense because when you squat, you actually reduce the angle between the rectum and the anus. So you straighten it up. And by so doing, then you allow the stool to evacuate quite easily. Now, with modern day technology, we have toilet seats, which in my view are the enemy to poop. And so you are in a seated position, which is really not optimal for evacuating stool. And obviously you can't squat on top of a toilet seat. I can't imagine how you would do that. So then what you want to do is, if you have constipation, is that you want to sort of invest in a little stool, a foot stool, so that you can actually put your feet up. So you're sitting on the toilet seat, but you also put your feet up. So by so doing, then you are able actually, as I say, to straighten that acute angle and therefore allow stool to pass.
A stool stool.
A poop stool. A stool stool. Yeah. And it works, you know, it works. It gives you sort of that leverage to sit on and then put your feet. So your feet must be above your hip joint. And then by pushing the Valsalva maneuver, then it really does help. That is if you're constipated. I mean, we don't all have to go investing in a school stool.
So here's a question from one of our listeners. Is it bad to push when you are constipated?
You know, it's like the chicken egg thing, right? You're constipated, therefore you push. But then when you push, because you're constipated, it can cause a variety of problems, right? So straining will cause engorgement of those rectal veins, resulting in hemorrhoids or piles. You can also result in tears in the anal mucosa, resulting in what we call anal fissure. Very, very painful condition. I mean, really painful. And now you can imagine when you have a crack or opening, every time the stool passes, you have stool which will infect the area. So you have pain and you have collections and so forth. It can also result in a loss of sensation to the rectum. So ultimately, over time, your rectum doesn't respond to the sensations from the brain that says evacuate. So as I say, it's difficult because when you're constipated, you want to push it out. But when you push it out, it can cause further problems. So what you want to rather do is that if you're constipated, try and control what goes up at top. Drink lots of water, exercise, eat the fiber that we took. And we took about 30 grams of fiber. It's quite a lot. If you can't get that from your fruit and veggies, then get a supplement. And then if necessary, then take laxatives so that you can avoid the straining and pushing, which, as I say, has got its own complications.
Didn't Elvis die like that, says Steve, by straining on the loo? I think he did. I think he did. That's what killed Elvis.
Listen, it's a true story. There are studies to show that particularly in the elderly population, right, who have cardiovascular problems, so heart disease, valvular disease, hypertension, et cetera, straining because of the pressure, it's called a Valsalva maneuver, can actually cause acute rises in the blood pressure, can cause arrhythmias. People can have myocardial infarction, so heart attacks. They've been sat down in hospital with patients who've come with cardiovascular problems, and then they were found in the hospital loo because they had just had a motion and they were straining. So it's a serious problem.
You could die from taking a dump.
You could shit yourself to death.
You could collapse, and depending on your comorbidities, but this is mainly a problem really in older people who've got cardiovascular problems and things like that. So it can be quite serious, yes.
All right, so let's get serious for a minute. What are the warning signs of a serious illness in the gut, and what types of diseases are the most common? Like, people always should look at what they've made, right? Because there could be a clue as to something really terrible that's going on. What if you, for example, what if you're shitting blood, for example? I mean, that's obviously a very bad sign, right?
It is never normal. And some people have the idea that if you see blood in your motion and you're a younger person, that's probably due to hemorrhoids or piles, and that's probably okay. Blood per rectum is never normal. And even less so as you age, because as you age, the risk of cancer is higher, and the way it presents is with blood per rectum. Even as a young patient with hemorrhoids, our audit here has shown that there may also be other lesions in the colon, so polyps and other things that can explain the blood. So whenever you've got red blood, it's better to consult. Even if it turns out to be hemorrhoids, at least it's been checked out to make sure that my is blood per rectum. If there is a change in the consistency of your stool or even the frequency, if there are associated symptoms like severe abdominal pain, marked weight loss. By marked weight loss, I'm talking more than 10% of your current body weight, particularly if the weight loss is obviously unintentional. That is a warning sign. If for whatever reason you have a blood panel and you have anemia that's picked up, you know, that is worth looking into. If you have a family history of colon cancer or colonic disorders, if you see blood that is not normal, if you have conditions like inflammatory bowel disease, you know, so there is a subset of cases where certainly blood is not normal. But my saying is that even in a young person, you want to first check it out to make sure that really it is just piles. But you may have, as I say, an anal fissure, you may have a polyp, you may have other things that are that can be treated.
Oh my God.
So, and I like what you said at the beginning of the question, that you really should look at what you produce as you put it. I'm even against these pellets that you use to color the, that you put in the cistern.
Yes.
You know, that
make the water blue. Yeah.
I mean, that all looks nice and smells nice. But if there's a problem with your stool, you won't necessarily pick it up easily. So I rather favor that you have clear water and have a look. Have a look when you wipe. Have a look into the pan, because you'll be able to see if things are not or things are changing. And I think as soon as you notice something abnormal, you should certainly go see someone.
So, all right. Beetroots. A lot of people coming up with beetroots here. Steve says beetroot gave me a scare the first time I saw it. Someone else said that, you know, that if you eat beetroot, you can see the color and then you think you're dying. So what's the truth about beetroot? I mean, what do we need to know about this? Does it always show in the stools? And obviously that's not something you need to worry about.
It's actually interesting because beetroot has, a chemical or something called beta cyan. And that obviously gives it its very ruby red color. We've even had patients who have bought beetroot crisps. And I think the beetroot crisps, actually, because of the additional coloring, then the dye in the food, that also can give your stool a red color. So, yes, it's true that some foods will change the color of your stool. If you eat a lot of spinach, you will notice that your motion is a bit greenish, color. The commonest cause, I guess, of color change would be something like somebody taking iron tablets. So it actually turns black. So that's the iron in the tablet.
Oh, wow.
You know, it is also said that if you eat a lot of blueberries, but I imagine that would have to be a lot of blueberries, then your stool can also change a bit purplish or whatever. So, yes, it's not something to worry about. Obviously, what you can do is just stop taking the beetroot, see, what the effect is. And it should take about 2 to 3 days for the beetroot you had to clear out, so your stool should clear. If it doesn't clear, then I think that's the time to go see somebody.
All right. Someone else says here, colonic irrigation, yes or no?
Sure. If you're talking to me, absolutely not. I am definitely biased against colonic irrigation. There's no evidence whatsoever that it does all those good things that it claims to do. But my concern, more than just the clinical evidence, is the risk of rectal perforation as they insert these enemas or whatever. And also, sometimes it depends on what is in the fluid that is put in these enemas. I mean, I've heard of coffee, and coffee can be very bad for you. There has been a study where a patient died from a colonic irrigation consisting of caffeine. And I don't know what the mechanism of death was. We can surmise a couple of things. But you have to be very careful about, A, what fluids are being used. Some of them, yes, they say it's just pure water, at a certain temperature or whatever. They make me feel uncomfortable. I think there are easier ways for gut health. If you want to clean out your system, go on a fruit and veggie, diet for a couple of weeks. That will resettle your gut microbiome very naturally, no complications. So I think there are much simpler ways to achieve that effect, whatever it claims to be. But if you're going to do it, I think just do your homework. Make sure that the place that's doing it is reputable. Even so, personally, I think it's probably not the best thing.
So, Doc, Ancient Ether wants to know, on that note of putting things in there, how does anal sex affect the rectum, especially in long term, considering rectum response? I told you were going to get really serious questions from our listeners. They don't mess around. So what's the answer?
I don't know the answer to that necessarily from a medical medical perspective. Look, the rectum is simply a muscle, and it has capacity. So I think from that perspective, I can't see that there's a problem. The problem is that the anus is a sphincter, so it's a very thickened, tight muscle, and of course its job is to stop us from running around incontinent all day. So the problem with putting things up your rectum, I think, is because over time, it can damage that sphincter. So obviously over time, I can imagine that the sphincter will get more lax and more lax, and so your risk then of soiling and so forth is higher. But look, the muscle is
Are there people who've had so much anal sex that their assholes just open the whole time and they have to wear like nappies? Are there people you've encountered like that?
Listen, I have not seen them in clinical practice, but in patients, in older women who've had, say, multiple pregnancies or deliveries, right? They can have a condition where you have vaginal prolapse, right? And that can result in anal incontinence. So, yes, in that situation, sure. Or patients who have had a very traumatic delivery and they've had tears of the perineum, so the anus is not supported as it should, yes, so you can get prolapse. So, yes, the anus then is a little bit more lax. And so, yes, they will suffer from soil. But in the context that you're describing, I can't say absolutely. Okay.
What about piles? Because you mentioned piles just now. Have we got any closer to sorting piles out as a problem?
Piles are common. Mm. So a person, 50% of the population will suffer piles at some point in life. And it may be short-lived or long-lived. And it all depends on your diet and so forth. Mm. If you have constipation, ongoing constipation, invariably you probably will have piles. So it's not really sorted out. I think the thing to do is to be aware of them, be aware of how they present, and then really, really work hard at improving your diet, increasing your fiber, increasing your water intake, exercising, et cetera, which will just improve the quality of your stool and thereby reducing the piles. There are sort of home remedies for that, but if they're very severe, very painful, if they become thrombosed and they stick out like grapes at the bottom and so forth, there are treatments for that. There are treatments for that when it's really severe. So, yes, it's really a problem, and it's a problem that people are embarrassed to talk about, even a problem that people are embarrassed to consult about. You know, but you don't have to suffer with piles. I think they can be sorted out pharmacologically and non-pharmacologically.
All right. Well, we're really covering everything here. Whew.
It's not so bad.
What is the right number of times you should be taking a poo every week or every day? Like, should you be doing it every day?
So there really is no right amount of thing or normal or whatever. You know, it is normal for you. But in order for consistency, for research, they say three times or less than three times per week is not normal. Now, I say that some people go once a week, Gareth, and they've been doing that all their lives. So nothing has changed and there are no alarm features. That means that that is normal for them. They have what we call slow transit. But in average, in speaking terms and for consistency, less than three times per week.
Sorry, you call that slow transit?
Slow transit constipation. So it just takes longer, much, much longer than somebody else.
They bake that in the oven for a lot longer than normal. All right, what do you call it when someone shits too often? Like, let's say they're doing it three times a day.
So that can be normal for them. Hmm. As long as there are no other features to suggest that there's pathology. So that can be absolutely normal for them. Some people who've got irritable bowel syndrome, so in colloquial terms, it's called spastic colon, will have frequency of nutrition, and that's fine for them. As long as there's no anemia, no weight loss, no blood, no cramps, you know, electrolytes are normal, et cetera, et cetera. That can be fine. So some people go once a day, others twice a day, others once a week. As long as it's normal for you and it has not recently changed, that is the thing.
All right, so a lot of very bad medical advice being thrown around here by our listeners. Steve says, does a dab of Vicks on piles work? Just rub deep heat on it, says Congo Chris. While Vicks on piles, wouldn't that burn, says Lindy. And then Steve says, burn them back in. This is not good advice.
Look, I agree with Vic. Vicks.
So that works.
And I think it would burn. I imagine it would burn. I wouldn't necessarily advise it. Also, Vaseline, for instance.
Yeah.
So Vaseline can become irritant, particularly if there already breaks in the skin. You know, and even glycerin suppositories. I know, you know, people love to prescribe those, but those can cause irritation and soiling. So those sort of local remedies are probably not right. If you're treating piles, there are suppositories that you can use, and there are specific creams with anti-inflammatory properties that can be used. But those home remedies can be problematic, I think. What you'd rather do is what we call a sitz bath. So you put a sitz bath, so warm water with a little bit of salt. Salt has got sodium chloride. Mm-hmm. And then you sit in it. So that will actually help to relieve any piles, any irritation. And
so
also
hang on a second. So you'd put this in a bucket or in a Tupperware or something?
Hold on a second.
Just hold
I think
on.
A bucket would be difficult.
All right, so let's say it's a big bucket. So what do you mix in there?
So water, warm water. And a little bit of salt.
A little bit of salt.
We actually use that in hospital.
What, a tablespoon? How much salt are we talking about here?
Well, it will be relatively the amount of water that you actually have in the bath. So it must be a little bit salty.
Okay.
And then you just submerge your bottom in it. And actually it works. We use that even in hospitals for patients who've had perianal surgery, for women who have delivered.
You let your asshole just sit in the salty water for a little while, and it will relieve you.
Yeah, it works. Works very well.
A sitz bath.
A sitz bath. S-I-T-Z.
Yes.
Sitz bath.
Amazing. So Beth says you can actually buy a sitz bath that fits on a toilet seat, apparently.
Well, there you are.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So what about the smells? I mean, like, what is a dangerous, bad? Because everybody thinks, like, all smells are acceptable when it comes to this. That is not true. There are some smells that should be a warning, an alarm bell. And there's some smells that some people, I mean, I believe it is possible that there are some people who don't have any smells at all. Is that true?
That is true. So it depends on what you put in. Indeed, what you eat is who you are and what you produce, right?
Mm.
So look, in the colon, there are bacteria. And these bacteria, they ferment. They ferment the foods that we eat. And that's actually a good thing. Mm-hmm. But by so doing, they also produce certain gases, which is why, you know, the fart smells. And it is normal, by the way, to fart at least up to 20 times a day. And for whatever reason, men fart a lot more times than women do. So up until 20, 30 times a day is actually normal. It's a normal physiological.
So there's just funky smells in the air all the time.
Sorry?
No, I'm saying so there's just funky smells in the air all the time.
Yeah, but you never lived with a man.
So it's the methane. So the bacteria produce a couple of gases. One of them is called methane. And that's what gives that smell. Now, certain foods, as we know, they will make that worse. Beans, broccoli, those sorts of things, cauliflower, they contain a substance that actually, along with the methane, really. But it's normal.
So how about, I mean, like on an average day, you say you should fart like 20 times a day, and it's a good thing. I mean, obviously, socially, you can't just fart wherever you want. But how do you know? Because there are certain days that I've had in my life where I'm like, yo, there's a lot going on here today. Like, what does that mean? Does that mean that my digestive system is working harder, or does it mean that I ate something that was disagreeing with me? What's the story?
Yeah, so it generally would mean that you ate something that then resulted in that. But also if you're on certain medications, if you have a gastrointestinal infection, if there's some inflammation going on, etc., that also can contribute. But for most people, it really has a lot to do with what you've been eating, how slow your transit is. Because the longer it takes, then the more chance the bacteria have to ferment the food and produce this gas, etc. And I know that vegetarians will tell you that when people who used to eat meat before and now are vegetarians will tell you that actually now their farts don't smell. And in fact, when they have emotion, it does not smell. So yes, it can improve depending on what you put in.
Okay. Well, I'm curious to know then, like, you know, the different sounds that you hear when someone's taking a fart. Are those normal? Like, or if it's just sounding like it's a you know, what's going on? Like, is that an indication of something?
Look, the sounds are normal, right? You have this air that needs to come out. It comes through a tight anal sphincter, and it causes turbulence, and so it makes a noise. But when you have an infection and so forth, then obviously there's more gas produced, there's more of that, so it can make more sounds. When you're hungry, there can be more sounds that are made. But all of these things are perfectly normal. Perfectly normal. In my view, anyway.
Now, Corona's Boring says, if only there were a way to harness these farts to remove Eskom's dependency on coal. I mean, is it true that if you because of the methane, if you light a fart, it will always burn?
Listen, yes, they are flammable. They are flammable. And there was a case during COVID where the patient was having anorectal surgery. And so sometimes to close off the bleeding blood vessels, we use cotton, okay? And actually the patient got burned because of the cotton as well as the gas. So I mean, I think that is a serious thing. It's a very, very, very uncommon side effect. But yes, these gases can be flammable. But I don't imagine that people are running around trying to light fires close to people's anuses, I hope. You know.
So but there we go. I mean, when you said listen, I mean, I was like, sure, okay, this is obviously a serious issue. All right, we've got one or two more here. What is piles from sitting in a cold floor? Is that an urban legend or is that true?
You know, I heard this for the first time a few years ago, and I thought, well, I've never heard of this before. And I actually looked it up. So it turns out to be an old wives' tale. There was actually a study done in the Netherlands sometime, maybe 10 years ago or whatever, and they were looking at a couple of factors for piles. And it didn't matter, temperature, cold, hot, sitting on the floor, et cetera, et cetera. So there seems to be no evidence to support this. And in fact, I would think that if you have piles, and you sat on a cold floor, that would actually give you relief.
Does cold make piles better?
Yes, because the blood vessels contract, so they're not as engorged and filling up with blood, which is what causes part of the inflammation and the pain and so forth.
Sure.
It's like putting a cold press on an injury.
Are there like extremely large movements and then much, much smaller ones? I mean, what kind of range in kilograms or in grams is normal for a human being? And what's the greatest amount you've ever seen?
Thankfully, our patients don't come, you know, with samples to the hospital. 200 to 300 grams is touted as normal. So that's a normal, bulky stool, a healthy stool where somebody's eating a lot of fiber, right? So that's what would be considered normal. But as I say, it can be very, very variable. I think what you want to see is really a smooth, beautiful stool that has not too many cracks, that wasn't too difficult to pass, where you didn't have to strain and ooh and ah, you know. That speaks of a healthy sort of stool.
So you've told us what kind of food you can take to firm up the stools, but what kind of food can you eat that will loosen everything?
So coffee can loosen stool. Fluids definitely can loosen stool. Mm-hmm. Pears can loosen stool. Prunes, actually, there's evidence for prunes.
Prunes.
I mean, it is an effective.
Absolutely. Yeah,
prunes. I think it's 10 prunes been shown in a clinical study to loosen a stool.
Oh, old women swear by prunes. Old women will tell you that prunes are the most important thing of all. Well, listen, this is fascinating. What made you go into this? What made you study this particular aspect of human health? Because I can't imagine like there are that many people who during the stage that you were at university, now you've done, you know, basic medicine and you could be a GP or something, you decide to specialize and then you specialize in this. Like what made you decide on this?
You know, just purely accidental. So after I finished my FCP, so FCP is an exam that you do to become a specialist. Mm-hmm. So after I done that, I thought I wanted to do endocrinology, so the study of glands and sure. hormones and so forth. But then I was asked to cover somebody who was on maternity leave in gastroenterology. Mm-hmm. So I covered that person for 4 months, mm-hmm. and I just fell in love with speciality. And I think maybe the appeal was that not only do you consult patients in the clinic and so forth, but you also get to use your hands because we have these procedures, right? And I suppose secretly I wanted to be a surgeon, and this is probably the closest that I'd get to surgery. So I do gastroscopies, colonoscopies, and procedures, and I think there's a lot of fun in that. So and I just simply fell in love with it. And I do really genuinely believe that the gut really is the source of all disease, health, and so forth. And this was said by Hippocrates moons ago, thousands of years ago, and it actually turns out to be true.
And it also turns out, thanks to a lot of modern studies, that actually the gut and the gut biome is a major, major indicator of overall health, and it's a massive part of our actual identity. I mean, there are trillions and trillions of bacteria in your digestive tract that have contributed over millions of years to our DNA. We've shared things. We can't exist without them. They can't exist without us. You know, I was talking to Prof. Szabo, who's a psychiatrist, and he said they're even starting to figure out that your gut may even be affecting your mood. It may be affecting the function of the brain, everything else. And there may be an interdependency between those, which is way deeper than we think.
No, it's a huge, huge thing. And it's been shown to be linked to gut health, extra intestinal diseases, autism, you name it. And it is as unique as your fingerprint. Yeah. Right. So it can never be the same.
Speaking of unique, I mean, does everyone have a different looking asshole? I mean, you've probably seen a few. You've probably seen a few of those.
You know, to us they look the same. I mean, to us they look the same, and we don't think of it like that at all. You know, I know the patients think, "Oh my God," you know, but genuinely speaking, to us, it's just in a day's work.
All right. Well, this is fascinating. We really appreciate your time. And I'm sure that there are lots and lots of other questions that we haven't even covered today. But if you enjoyed this, you can catch Professor Mashiko Seshedi's episodes on the Health Matters podcast. That's available on cliffcentral.com or wherever you listen. Prof, thank you so much for joining us this morning and for teaching us so much about this, because I'm very glad that we can talk frankly and in a mostly adult way about it, right?
Listen, thanks for the invite, and I think this is really, really an important topic, and I think we should not shy away from it, and certainly we shouldn't be embarrassed about it.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Prof, and thanks for waking up early this morning to talk about poo with us. It's very, very good. All right, George Meany's here. Hooray.
Hey.
George, Gareth, change of subject.
That was fascinating.
It is fascinating. And nobody talks about this stuff. So
no.
I'm proud that we are breaking the barriers and addressing these things, because, I mean, it needs to be discussed.
Well, I mean, for full disclosure, I once took a sitz bath because I had a constipation problem, and what it caused was a problem in, you know, your think what happened was your rectum kind of like expands too much.
Oh,
or something.
Oh my God, George. Did it give you relief, sitz bath?
It does work.
You didn't know about a sitz bath. I didn't know about a sitz bath until today.
I didn't even know about those heels and positions that you have to be squatting.
See? So. Learn something new every day. Well, here he is. He's in studio with all of us. We're actually all in studio this morning.
I know, right?
Very cool. Simpiwe and George and I are now going to get into some of the stuff that George tells us about every week.
Yes.
And you can find out more about all of this. And sometimes they have really, really interesting episodes, even with guests every other week, on the Auto Trader podcast. So don't miss that. New episodes every single week. Mm-hmm. But what do you got for us today?
Parking. So how much does it cost to park in South Africa versus the rest of the world?
Do you think our parking's more expensive?
Well, I think so.
I mean, I know the answer to the question, so.
I think so. We pay far too much for that 1 hour, Gareth. R6, 10 rand.
Okay, so I have two examples of just this week. Last night I went for a birthday dinner type thing in Sandton at the Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Expensive. 20 rand, I think it was.
How many hours?
I was only there for 2.5 hours.
Okay.
That's too much.
Then I went to the gym on Thursday, much more of a sort of student area. I was in the gym for maybe 1 hour and 15 minutes, but they give you 2 hours free.
Oh.
So I paid zero on the one hand, and on the other hand, 20 rand. And I don't know. There's some places that overcharge because the property is owned usually by, you know, one of these big
one of those big
companies.
Yeah.
And they charge because that's the only income they get besides the rentals.
Yeah.
And they want to punish the consumer. I don't think you should have to pay those high prices.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what happened in shopping centers over the last 10 years, but there used to be a dual option where you could choose to take free parking, which meant you had to park in the sun most of the time, or you could choose undercover parking, which you had to pay for. I think from what I see, most shopping centers have gone full paid. You don't. There's no free option anymore. I mean, Eastgate Shopping Center, I don't think there's free parking. There's booms at the top level parking now.
In other words, you have no option.
You've got no option. You have to.
And what's irritating about this is obviously some of them have now got a credit card machine for the paying of the parking, but sometimes you have to have cash, which is such a pain in the – we've just been talking about backsides, but yeah, that's a real problem.
So I think it's Liberty, I'm not sure, has implemented this app called Admit. Which I use. In many of the shopping centers around Joburg, you don't even have to open your window, take a ticket, nothing. It just bills you. But that is a recipe for increasing parking fees because you won't care. You know, it'll just go off your credit card, but you only see it at the end of the month. So you won't really see the R6 that you go in there for 20 minutes charged or something like that. But
a lot of places will give you the first half hour or hour free.
Yes.
And they should.
Yeah. If you want to just quickly pop in and out, I think that's a good idea.
Why should that cost you a whole bunch of money?
So it turns out that the average parking fees in South Africa are about R23. So your 20 odd wasn't bad. R23 for a 2 hour park.
Annette says, try parking in Sydney, $250.
That's a lot of money.
And then Derek says, Annette, I feel if you are parking in Sydney, she has the right to charge whatever she wants. So let's be clear. Corona's Boring says, a motorbike equals free parking whenever.
Oh, well, yeah, no, I suppose you could. You just stand the bike somewhere, and the booms have gaps, so don't do that.
But how do we compare with the rest of the world?
So we rank 38th on the list of world ranking parking fees by a company called Parkopedia Global Parking Index. There is an actual index.
Yeah.
They analyze or research 90 million parking spaces across 20,000 cities in 90 countries, and a 2 hour parking cost in South Africa is on average R23, whereas Australia, for instance, which tops the list, R330 for 2 hours.
Well, I know, for example, I'm going to the airport now. That's going to cost.
Oh, no, the airport's expensive. Let me tell you a bad story. It was my stupidity, but I went to the airport. It was just after lockdown opened up. Airport AXA Joburg opened up I think it's level 2, to drop and go. So you don't have to go to the top. You can go through level 2, which gives you 30 minutes of free parking to go and pick somebody up. I was doing a business trip. I went and I parked on level 2, which I usually did for the last 10 years. I parked on level 2.
Right.
Because otherwise I lose my car. Mm-hmm.
You find a place you know.
Yes.
Right.
I park there.
Right.
I parked on level 2. I'm the kind of person that slides into the airplane when it's about to take off. Yep. I don't like sitting in the airport.
No.
I leave my car there. I go on a business trip for, I think it was 3 days. I come back. R5,000 parking.
What?
Ooh, Jesus. Did you fight with them?
Yep.
You bloody well better.
Down to the parking management. Like, you know.
How many days?
3.
No.
So, I went down to the parking management and I said to them, no, this can't be. No, but you parked in the short-term parking for picking up passengers. I said, but I've always parked on level 2. Didn't you see the signs? I said, no, I didn't see the signs. Signs were there, so that's why it was my fault. And they wouldn't let me off this, eh?
Please tell me you didn't have to pay that.
I had to pay it.
I could not get my car out.
£5,000. Yep. Yep.
George.
Oh, that's so much money.
That's absolutely disgusting.
I sent them an email afterwards. I complained. I did all that stuff.
Well, they should be ashamed of themselves.
Sure.
A lot of people wouldn't be able to pay that and would end up having to leave their car there. And then what happens? Like, what's the plan after that?
Exactly.
Idiots.
Yeah.
That makes me so angry.
That is an anomaly. But New York parking, R743 for 2 hours.
Mm.
This is steep.
Yeah, steep, steep, steep. So that's Parkopedia. And then the next thing is, do you ever eat in your car?
Yeah, a lot of people do. Lots of people do.
I will say this. When I first got my car, the first 2 months, I was like, no one's eating. Mm-hmm. No one's eating. And then one day, you just, like, you're so hungry, that drive-thru, and you, and then there's tickets.
So how do you, I look at some people's cars, and it's just an absolute mess inside. You see McDonald's back.
That's gross.
Yeah. No.
And it smells horrible, too.
Yes, we don't do that. So my gran is banned from eating from my car because she'll leave crumbs and whatnot. So also, there's certain people, you're like, no, you, I can't.
You're a mess. Cars.
Yes.
Right.
So how do you stop the mess from accumulating in your car? You use this rule called leave no trace. Apparently, this is the thing around the world, this leave no trace. If you Google it, it's actually a thing. Camping, people that do camping are road trippers. They use this rule called leave no trace, which is kind of rules that you set for yourself when you get out the car, take the junk out with you.
I like that. I don't love to leave a mess in the car, but sometimes, I mean, you eat. You know what really bothers me is like the sauces and there's some food you should not eat in a car,
like a pie
or a burger. You can't eat those things while you're driving. I'm sorry, people think they can, but they inevitably mess on their clothes or mess on the seats or mess on the floor, or it's going to be a mess.
So this leave no trace principle also speaks to what you're saying is eat foods that have neutral colors. Which I don't know if it's possible, but how do you eat foods that have neutral colors? So if you eat a hamburger and there's lots of colored sauces and stuff, that's going to cause the biggest mess in your car.
Right.
And the biggest smells in your car.
No, for sure.
So there is a real thing called leave no trace. But I don't think you need to go that far to keep your car clean, if you ask me.
Okay.
And then VW, you know, every car maker is going on this electric vehicle drive.
Right.
They have made a... an electric office chair, which let me see if I can I can paste it to you. There we go. They've made an electric office chair.
Okay.
Put this because picture. I don't know if they've got too much time on their hands, but the VW engineers on the commercial side have made this electric office chair, and this thing can do 12 miles per hour. What is that? About 20 kilometers an hour.
Yeah, so this is the thing. Would you just buy it and then you ride it around on the office floor?
Well, they've only made a one-off, so it's not for sale. So the engineers at VW made this electric office chair, and the thing can do 12 miles per hour, can do 7.4 miles of range, they say that
probably not very good at like off-road.
No.
Tiny little wheels.
This is for getting away from your colleagues or getting to the toilet quickly.
Okay. Getting to the toilet quickly. Yeah, you have bigger problems if you need this. And it's got lights on it.
Oh, it's got lights. You can steer it.
And it's got a seatbelt just in case you fall out at speed. That's ridiculous.
So the engineers at VW obviously have a lot of time on their hands making it.
They're having far too much fun at work. Like, what?
Okay.
And then finally, a very interesting thing. Hyundai. So, let me explain.
Nobody's ever said that line. A very interesting thing. Hyundai.
Hyundai. Hyundai, the car maker.
Right.
So, seatbelts. Seatbelts have an inherent problem in that the waist strap or the strap around your waist has to or supposed to be around your hips.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it restrains you. And then there's this phenomenon called submarining or submarine where the strap moves up into your stomach area.
All right.
Rectum submarine. So it moves into your stomach area. Apparently, if you have a car accident with the lap strap, that's what it's called, lap strap around your stomach, can cause internal organ damage.
Your bangani, your.
So make sure that the seatbelt, if you've got a big tummy, you've got no problem because it can't come up over your.
Okay. So if you've got a boop, you're okay.
You're okay. So underneath, over your hips. But the thing is, because of this submarining problem, Hyundai has done research and they've now decided to make a crotch airbag.
What?
Really?
Yes.
All right.
It's a real thing because all airbags right now in cars, which are mandatory, the front airbags are mandatory in all cars,
mm-hmm.
The front airbag protects your head. The side airbags protect your head. So now they've realized that there is actually a problem with your torso moving forward in a car accident.
Yeah.
So how do you stop that? With a seatbelt moving into the submarining area, causing internal organ damage. Crotch airbag.
Okay, well, you've taught me another thing. Sure. We thought we'd learnt a lot about the sit spot. Now we know about a crutch airbag as well. Listen, if you haven't learnt stuff from this morning, you weren't listening.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Have a good weekend. Have an excellent Friday. We will see you on Monday, 6 a.m., bright and early. Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye.
Cliffcentral.com.